Welcome to day two. Tonight, a couple of announcements before we start. For all the legislators, your legislative packet for Tuesday's meeting is in your mailbox, and if you pick it up, it will save some postage for the office. And the second item is Norma will tell you at this point what is on your desk. Yeah. And the added items.
I said the added items on your desk.
The added items on your desk.
You should have, hopefully, in order, set them down in the order of presentation this evening, a packet for the youth services, a copy of the PowerPoint presentation, a copy of Office for the Aging's PowerPoint presentation, the PowerPoint presentation for Cooperative Extension. Can't hear. There's a yellow packet from the Department of Social Services. And earlier, I think it was the end of last week, we got a packet from Public Health. These departments are going to be presenting this evening. I want to make sure that you've got those copies on top. And then there are copies of the presentations that were made last night for county meetings. And probation. Is it anyone missing?
Martha?
Public health?
Public health.
Yeah,
it's this one.
Public health for the cover sheet was sent to you last week.
We got last night.
Last week or last night?
Like we used to do in third grade, how many people have those with them? Okay, that's not good. Are we going to go over that?
This one. Yes, that's the season. If anybody needs a copy, I do have a couple of extra copies.
I think we maybe should run some extra copies.
Yeah, that's actually that.
Let me, while we're doing that, let me remind you of a comment that was made last night. If you have your 8.5 by 11 pad with you as we go through these things and you have questions, please note them, and we will bring them, and you will bring them up if you wanted to make changes or whatever in the first voting meeting or the voting meetings as we go along. So it would probably help you if you were able to keep those things in some sort of an order. The second thing is, and I mentioned it last night, I will write all your names down on my paper as we go through the questions, and I would like to have one question at the most two out of anyone at a time so that we can make sure that everyone here gets a chance to ask the questions they need to ask.
Do we get to double up because not all board members are here?
I'll get back to you on that. Let me start with Youth Services and Rec Partnerships. Nancy is here, and two of her colleagues are here who may answer questions. The only thing I will say is when you answer, you have to be at a microphone to answer. And Nancy is going to begin her presentation right now.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, legislators, for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing and what we hope to do in the year 2010. As I want to first, though, introduce, on my right, Nancy Zook is the coordinator of the services that we provide through our not-for-profit agency partners and the coordination of runaway and homeless services. To my left is Janice Johnson, who coordinates both the services and the system that we provide to municipalities and also provides staff support to the Recreation Partnership. So I'm delighted to have them here. I'm going to try to run through the presentation, but if there are questions, they are the answer people that will help out with that. The first slide that you see talks about our mission, and if you read it and look at it, you can see that it is closely and intimately aligned with the county's mission. And we feel strongly about that because we are mission-driven. In the overview, I want to be able to describe the continuum of services that we feel are important and on which our presentation and our complete services are based. And that includes being able to have a foundation that's data-driven, research-based, and planning for our entire operation. We view the continuum of services as needing to start with those that are most accessible, those are most inclusive, provided in community-based settings that are least restrictive, and are, as a consequence, least expensive. And we provide some of those services through the REC partnership. Young people often need more than recreation services. We know that. And the network of locally planned, locally delivered services that are available through our municipal youth service system are the first ones, almost a sentinel kind of function, first ones to see young people in need, and the services are closest to the young people. The agency services that we provide begin to work with young people whose needs are beginning to surface and escalate, and as they need more service, the services are more specialized. But we'll talk about each of these in a minute. Our continuum then moves young people from the most inclusive and least expensive to the more specialized services, and our goal is actually to try to prevent them and divert them from going into juvenile justice and or the more expensive treatment services provided by DSS. That's in general how we're organized. The presentation then, I'll start and touch briefly just on each of these. Again, I'm not going to attempt to read all the items on the slide that you have, but on the left side of that, what we're telling you is that planning and coordination programs is our core program, it is our foundation, and we are providing 4.8 staff are responsible for providing the state-required services and the services required of us very explicitly in the county charter. So those are the things that we do with 4.8 FTEs. In addition, in the purple box to the right, we also have 1.2 FTEs who are grant-funded. We have applied for and provide subcontracted services to for two different programs. A community coalition for healthy youth is committed to doing countywide substance abuse prevention, and we are the fiscal managers and coordinators of that effort. And for JobLink at the Employment and Training Office, we help prepare young people for worker readiness. That's planning and coordination. Moving into the program side of things, the REC partnership, next one on your right there, again, is the more inclusive services. I think people are pretty familiar with this, so I won't go through them all. This is somewhat familiar. What I think is most important about this part of it is that this partnership is long-standing, large, complex, and extremely successful. And part of the success is based on the county's financial support, which I think you've heard repeatedly from your municipal partners over the years. And this also is what helps us reach the most children throughout the county. It complements what's offered locally. We are expecting fewer services. So those little blue boxes in purple on the right are our projections. We expect to be serving fewer kids and running fewer services because of cuts. The municipal youth services system is community-based, doing early intervention. What isn't clear from your county budget pages is that municipalities do match every one of the county dollars with local dollars. And they are, what's important here is this is huge. As young people begin to need more services, it is those closest to them who begin to see their needs first. So these programs, planned by local people, delivered locally, so that they're most accessible, especially in our rural communities. They're seeing young people at the earliest stages of their need, when they're just not fitting in, when their needs are beginning to pop up, but they have not escalated to the point of needing very intensive interventions. The system has won statewide awards, both for the innovation of being locally planned and centrally managed, but also because by working with 9 different rural youth commissions, the community leadership development that goes on in those community and the community connection is outstanding. And our staff helped make that happen. So next area, agency services. Again, as young people need more and more specialized services, it is with countywide agencies, both not-for-profits and the Ithaca Youth Bureau, are contracted to do very specific, achieve measurable outcomes. The list of individual agencies I've not included here, but it is in your big budget book under the contracts page. But the kinds of service, even within agencies, flows from less restrictive, more youth development, to more and more specific, specialized, and intensive services, to the point where we expect in 2010 to be serving about 435 sexually abused kids and or runaway and homeless young people. Based on our projections and the cuts we've had to make, we expect to be serving about 13% fewer kids in 2010. We believe that this approach, and I flipped the pyramid here just to sort of make the point that planning is our foundation and the programs, as the needs escalate, so do the services. If you take the total budgets being spent on all of the programs in the universal early intervention and targeted services and divide them by the kids we're serving, it is about $375 per youth per year. And if my little pointer works, which it may not, where is it? Yeah. If you look at the top there, it's probably the least expensive way for the Department of Social Services to provide intensive out-of-home placement is family foster care, but it can range up to state institutions, which can be extremely expensive, which I'm sure Patricia will talk about the challenges of that in her presentation. We know that our system is working because the agencies have documented for us that they can tell us that in 2008, very specifically, 68 young people were diverted from either foster care, jail, or detention by their direct service programs. So our system is working now for the budget side of things. Similar to charts you've seen and we'll see again, however, I did ask Kevin, and I appreciate his help, in adding a second line, because the top line is our total FTEs. We've had 6.5 people who are going down to 6 in our department. The blue line indicates those are the county-funded positions, which just the point of this is we have grant-funded staff. This chart could probably be explained better by somebody else, but essentially if you follow the green line across, you see the trend line in county spending is going down, not unlike other departments, some special twists for us. The blue above that green line represents the state aid and the grants that we are able to leverage. This slide probably is a very clear way of showing that the county contribution to the REC partnership is about 25%, and that's pretty self-explanatory. In terms of highlights, in late 2008, we worked closely with schools to create for the first time and disseminate for all secondary students in 5 of 6 school districts a survey of students' alcohol and drug use, their attitudes, behaviors at home, in the community, and school. Those results are being used today by schools to improve school climate, to help kids stay connected, and that data will be very useful to us as we look at how to use it for evaluating some of our prevention initiatives. The other item, which I think some people, particularly on Human Services, know more about, is that for 20 years, we've actually been bringing together all of the people running employment programs around the same table so that they can share their programs and opportunities to maximize the number of young people being hired. This summer, it really ramped up the effort because there was, in addition to TANF funding for summer jobs, our Workforce Investment Board had stimulus funding to provide a big bump up in summer employment. Nancy Zook was the person who helped Julia Maddock actually bring the three provider agencies together so they could help design and run an integrated program called Jumpstart Jobs that, in combination with our municipal jobs program, our estimates are that about 719 young people were hired this summer. We help municipalities get grants. We help agencies implement innovative and effective programs. And a special project that the Community Coalition did actually reduced alcohol use at DeWitt Middle School by 11% over time at a time when other middle schoolers' use was increasing. So our total system serving about 8,200 kids. Those are our highlights. The pressure points are similar to some other departments. State aid cuts, the uncertainty of COPS funding, it pretty much says it right there. I think the concern we all have is that we, too, are facing cuts when people need us the most. The budget proposal, again, this slide is a little different from the format some others have used because I really wanted you to understand what on the far left we are spending in 2009, because our request in the middle is, as you know, following your guidelines, we were asked to request 6.25% less. The maroon cap on that line actually was modified and includes two different OTRs, one for a very small partial restoration of what we lost in Target, and the second was permission to use rollover. The third column, you see, it includes funding for a recommendation from the county administrator for us to be able to use our rollover, but not a Target restoration. And in addition, and I'll talk about this more in a minute, you will see, a actual Target reduction to our base budget. But I'll talk about that next. Rec partnership, pretty straightforward, partial recommendation, but to hold steady, to honor our commitment to our municipal partners, however, unable to provide the 2.5% increase requested. I actually appreciate a lot the fact that many legislators individually and you collectively as a group have asked to know what cuts are invisible in the budget. And in the budget documentation, I've tried my best, and it's even more dense this year than previous years, partly because we had a new county administrator, and I wanted to be sure people knew what those missing pieces were. This gives us a chance to highlight. Bottom line is, Youth Board was cutting not just county funds, but allocating cuts in state aid. And the bottom line here that you're not even seeing is that at least 400 young people are going to lose services. What we found is when we looked at who's going to lose services, rural young people are being disproportionately hurt in some of the cuts that are occurring, not only in the agencies that we fund, but also because municipalities were losing not just county funding, but state aid as well. Loss of service, loss of connection, disconnected youth are more likely to be idle. They're more likely to have needs that aren't getting met, and they're going to begin to pop up, but we don't have a good projection for you on just how many are going to pop up in the other systems. The agencies we fund at the municipal and agency level are also going to lose staff as we cut back. We have some cutbacks in our department, but about 80% of our budget is actually contracted out. Those providers, as they have cuts, are going to be losing some staff. What's new and different for us that I want to take, I added an extra slide because it's important for people to understand that in addition to our 6.25% cut, in addition to the county administrator not being able to restore any of those cuts, He needed to reach into our budget to take an additional $45,000 from our base budget, our ongoing target budget. So these are, this isn't an OTR. This is our base budget reduced. And again, what that produces is additional young people above and beyond the 400 that will lose services. This is our estimate, but it's unclear whether how those ripple effects will fully play out, because we are partners with municipalities and they are just in the beginning stages of putting their municipal budgets together. We don't know quite how this will completely play out, but there are ripple effects when young people are hired through this program. It's the most flexible program. It hires the young people with needs who fall just outside the state and federal guidelines, which are very restrictive in terms of who can be funded. This reaches young people with what we might say non-financial needs, and that's where the impact will be. Within our department, the only thing I really want to call your attention to there is we will lose a half a position due to the combination of the 6 1/4 cut and the increase in the fringe. That will be a cut made through attrition in our department. The rest of them, I think, when you look at our line items in our budget, you'll see where those show up. Our over-target requests, we had two for our department and one for the Rec Partnership, which is a separate fiscal unit because it has a completely independent intermunicipal board over which neither I as staff nor the youth board has control. The first one was to try to partially restore some of the services for those high-need rural youth. That was denied. We did get recommendation to use our rollover in our administration that we'd saved for 2 years to try to do some reorganizing and some transitions. The Rec Partnership partly funded, as I mentioned before, to maintain at the 2009 level to try to honor its commitment to municipalities, but no increase is recommended. The impact, the long and the short of it is, on the first one, kids suffer. I mean, they lose services and in all kinds of ways. The rollover for the department would certainly mean we have a lot less staff time available to provide the services that we do to agencies and municipalities. Rec Partnership depends. They're starting with 5 fewer programs in 2010. Just even though they're asking for a 2.5% increase from every municipality because costs have increased, they're starting with 5 fewer programs. Whether that increases will depend on whether this OTR is funded or not funded. Hard to know exactly because there are so many other partners. You asked us to tell us about some new initiatives. They'll be a little muted probably for 2010 given the cutbacks that we're facing. But the first part is to really help agencies and municipalities restructure the way they plan and deliver services. We are required by New York State to update our 3-year plan. We do that in collaboration with the Department of Social Services. And we do have some resources to do our new 5-year federal grant. The 2010 survey will need to be updated. And this youth program quality assessment deserves more time than I can give it tonight, but it is basically using nationally validated standards to help the people working with young people in group settings to assure that they are using research-driven ways of working with young people so that we know they're getting high-quality services. I'm confident that people are getting really good services, but this is an independent set of measures that the program itself can use and external monitors can use. So we're hoping, we're not sure we can do it as robustly as we had hoped initially, but that is something on our horizon. But we will do less, and we will do our 3-year plan in a much more stripped-down, bare-bones way because of the cuts that we're facing. But ever onward, that's all I had to say.
Thank you very much. If there are questions, please raise your hand, and we'll head out. Pam Dooley, and then Carol.
Yes, Joe, you had mentioned at one point, and I don't know where it is here, but the fact that there was some federal money that you thought was going to be allocated for youth services, and is that where the additional target cut came and you decided?
It was a part of our thinking, and Nancy will tell you that the young people who are eligible for employment in this program aren't subject to the income limits that are in place for the federal stimulus monies that are coming down for youth employment. But in our thinking and our approach to this, we did recognize the fact that there are a lot of stimulus monies coming to this community because of the presence, really, of the two colleges and how that affects our census numbers. We get a disproportionate amount of stimulus money for youth employment as opposed to adult employment. So there will be, we believe, a great deal of money next year through the stimulus for youth employment. I think Nancy could probably give you the income thresholds better than I, but there are income limits on young people who can get jobs through the stimulus program. But it was a part of our thought. There will be money out there for youth employment. The other part of the thought was this is one area of the budget that is somewhat unique in being discretionary. This is very much a discretionary expenditure that the county does. So those two things combined led to us basically reducing that by $45,000 and then allocating that money to fund OTRs elsewhere in the county budget.
Yeah, sure. No, I just wanted to follow on. I mean, certainly Joe and I did discuss this, and there may well be stimulus money we don't know about, but I know that our workforce board was told the amount of stimulus money coming into this community needed 75% of it needed to be spent this year. So while that money was able to hire 172, I think. Their own projections are about 40 young people through that. But things may change, more money may flow. But currently, that spending was front-loaded in 2009. But that's why we think it'll hurt, but it is the reasoning that Joe used.
Julie.
A while ago, you said that there was a survey in five of the six school districts. Which was the one that wasn't surveyed?
Newfield had the opportunity to participate and chose not to.
Thanks.
Carol.
Yeah.
And then Martha.
Hi. Thanks, Nancy. You and your staff do a wonderful job, and we appreciate having that. I have two questions. One is about demographics of youth, and the other is about the proportion between administration and program delivery. Mm-hmm. So the demographic question is just what are the demographics of our youth under 18, and as we move forward, what do you anticipate? And do you want to answer? I can do this either way. I can lay out both questions.
Yeah, no, I'll do a very short answer. I think on the demographic side, the one person I didn't bring was Chris Bennett, our planner, who actually knows that stuff a whole lot better than I. I know that out of the 30,000 or so young people under the age of 21 in our county, we tend to focus on those who are between the ages of 0 and 17, not for our service delivery, but for just the number that resonates for people as local young people because of the college students, and that's about 18,000 or so. They are diverse. We had an age bubble in the middle school years that is moving sort of through the high school. We had predicted a number of years ago at Human Services that as that age bubble matured and did the kind of experimenting and acting out that is part of becoming an adult, that we would see more acting out behaviors, which I think some of our statistics are showing. So I don't have more in terms of the demographic trends on that. The second question, though, was what?
Well, I didn't get to ask it. It has to do with the proportion that we're spending administration versus program delivery, especially as we need to make the cuts that we're making.
Sure.
In your slides, you talked about the state and county charter required services, taking the 4.8 FTEs, and that being 19% of the department budget.
Yes.
That's, I assume if the if the program delivery portion is cut, that becomes, that is either now or will become a larger proportion of the budget. And, you know, can you comment on any ability to move any of the staff over to maintain any of the program delivery?
Well, we used to have 8 full-time county employees dedicated to the core service. We now have 4.8. We do have 1.2 staff, but we actually are in the same environment that many of our not-for-profit partners are, which is, as our funding was cut by both the county and the state, we too have sought grants on a very selective basis, none that would compete with our direct service agencies, but grants for the purpose of planning and coordinating services. So we are already fairly lean, and some of those responsibilities don't change in a direct one-to-one proportion. So 19% of our efforts on our planning requirements, support of the system that the county created with the municipalities, and managing the contracts. But it's not, I mean, there's so much more technical assistance that both Nancy does with our agency, Janice does with our municipalities, that we're not just managing paper in our office. We're out, I mean, Janice will tell you how many nights a month she's out in communities helping them design programs, respond to local needs. Nancy is the person who helped the Learning Web get their, how much money there for the apartment grant?
$200,000
a year.
$200,000
a year.
5 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, we are out there generating resources. So I think, Carol, probably the better answer is what we do with our staff time may shift to enable the direct service programs to find alternative resources. That's why when we talked about what's coming up for next year, restructuring services, looking for alternative resources, and helping them with that. Because we actually have a pretty good track record in developing grants with measurable outcomes and whatnot in ways that agencies who are working with kids day-to-day often don't have the time to do. Because we tend to contract primarily with smaller agencies that don't have grant writers on staff.
So, Martha.
Thank you. When I was going through this, I was confused about the OTRs and the 45,000, et cetera. So I had some email traffic today, and then I realized, oh, this is a cut to the base, and I took it like a big gulp because that's tough. And in particular, the top priority OTR is not funded for high risk rural youth. So I'm curious if we were to. How would this work if we were to want to put money back in? Would the first money go back into the base, or do we vote on the OTR? What, you know, if we, let's say we had $20,000 that we could justify and get 8 votes for, you know, where would that? How does that work? Where would that go?
You would.
Well, I would be happy to talk with anyone who wanted to make such a proposal, but I think from our departmental perspective, I mean, I think reinstating funds to the base, the fact is that what's been cut from the base will hurt rural young people. It hurts the services provided at a municipal level by municipal programs. The agencies are also cutting back services throughout the county, but disproportionately in rural communities. So my inclination, we would talk about it but and consult with the youth board, but my inclination would be to say restore money to the base. I mean, if in fact you wanted to shift, if there was a priority shift in our base to be able to do something else with it, but I think that this program is really important in having a toehold for the future, because the county dollars do leverage other municipal dollars and some private sector dollars as well, would be my inclination about where to put it. The mechanics of it, I'll leave to these guys. But
okay.
Are there any other questions?
That's helpful.
Hearing none, seeing none, thank you very much, all of you who came, and we will move on to the Office of the Aging, line item budget, page 203, OTR page 45.
I don't know whether...
Are you on the computer also?
Okay. I don't know quite how to get from me to you, but others will know that.
Here comes.
Martha? I remember some departments who have the ability to put the money wherever they want it if we give them more, agreeing to do specifically what the legislature asked. Mm-hmm. So I think it's up to the department to understand it that way.
Right. Right, so it's not... Okay.
So, no.
But I think, Julie, we've kind of sometimes said this is our priority, is that you do this with it.
And sometimes the department head will say,
For the record, I'm Lisa Holmes, the director of the Tompkins County Office for the Aging.
Okay. You're on.
Take it from here.
Go.
Okay. I just want to start by going over the mission of the Office for the Aging is to assist older adults in Tompkins County to remain living independently at home for as long as possible with a decent quality of life and human dignity. We do this by offering an array of services, both provided directly through our office and through subcontract. You'll see them listed here on this first slide. We're a trusted source of information for seniors and their families on any number of issues, including Medicare, long-term care services, support for caregivers. We offer a number of supportive services that you see listed. We provide nutrition services, serving over 500 older adults with hot noontime meals 5 days a week through a subcontract with FoodNet, Meals on Wheels. We offer the Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly program, or ICEP, which is case management and in-home aid service to approximately 110 frail seniors in the community. And the aid service is subcontracted through several local home care agencies. We are also the direct provider of personal emergency response systems, which is a medical alert program, equipment in the homes of over 500 frail seniors who are at risk of falling or have other medical complications. So that's us in a nutshell. Getting right into it, this next slide shows our full-time equivalent history, which has been relatively stable. We've made incremental increases to fund a part-time outreach worker to keep up with the increasing demand for personal emergency response services. But this person's salary has been funded mostly through the monthly fees charged for the PERS program, which is on a sliding fee scale based on income. And at the same time, we've had to decrease one aging services specialist by 0.4 full-time equivalent due to a loss of state funding for the long-term care insurance program in 2009. So that puts us at 10.3 full-time equivalents for 2010. This slide, much like Nancy's, shows our revenue history over the last 5 years with the green trend line representing the county share. And according to these figures, and as you can see, we're, according to that green trend line, we are below where we were in 2006 in terms of local share.
Okay. Can you just wait a second? I have a question about all of these. Something Nancy said, I suddenly perceived something. So anything above the green line, you're saying, is reimbursement you get or revenue from somewhere else?
Yes.
And everything below? Thank you.
Mike, just a quick follow-up. And the broad green line with triangles represents
dollars.
Yes.
Okay. Wait, I have another follow-up here. So that's not true of fringe, though. We pay the fringe. Is that correct?
But the green line does include fringe costs, correct?
Right. So fringe is up on the top, so it's not everything below the green line.
Yes. The local share includes the fringe costs. The local share is a local share. What it pays for is subject to reasonable interpretation. Yeah. We pay the local share.
Okay. And it has to include the fringe because that's what the cuts were made on. It was made on the fringe along with other things.
Yes. Okay, so despite these shifting sands of state and local revenue, our office and our staff and our subcontractors continue to show great initiative and commitment to providing quality services. So briefly, in 2009, we provided over 100 low-income senior households with over $150,000 worth of home repairs. This is funding received through the RESTORE program and through legislative member item funding. And these are dollars which would not have come into Tompkins County, and the work would not have been done if we hadn't taken the initiative to apply for these funds, and we wouldn't have been awarded the funds without a proven track record of success. So, then also, through separate grant funding, we have expanded the Powerful Tools for Caregivers program, and to date, we've trained over 80 family caregivers in this using this evidence-based model. And the program has been done in collaboration with other community agencies who've trained trainers to help implement this. So through this program, we've strengthened our own partnerships with Cayuga Medical Center, Cornell, Lifelong, Hospicare, DSS, GIAC, Kendall, and Lakeside. And through yet another grant, we've spearheaded a community collaboration on the local long-term care workforce shortage, and we've worked on funding for community aid training and retention efforts. And in addition to all of these initiatives, we're busy enough providing our own quality core services, which we know go a long way in keeping seniors living at home independently and out of more costly institutional care. Pressure points, I've probably shown these slides every year, but I can't overstate how much the demand for services is growing, and it's based on demographic increases. Last year, the services provided by our office and through funding through our subcontractors reached a total of 6,200 seniors, which is a 17% increase over the previous year. So on to our budget proposal for 2010. This slide represents what we've requested and what's in our tentative budget. We've managed to present a budget that fits within the target that we've been given. We've absorbed the cuts and still been able to preserve existing staff and services. And how did we do this? Well, earlier on in the year, we did have to do a structural change. We reduced one full-time aging services specialist. I already referred to this to cover a cut to New York State funding through the long-term care insurance program. This past summer, we have been invited to partner with the New York State Office for the Aging on two new grants. One is a community living program grant, which is $25,000 per year over the next 2 years. And the other is an Aging and Disability Resource Center grant, which is $50,000 per year over the next 3 years. So these are both federal revenue sources passed through the state, and they will fill the gaping hole in our budget. And both of these grants will build on the work that we're already doing locally with New York Connects, and we will be working to expand access to long-term care services for seniors in the county. So we plan on covering existing staff salaries and reassigning responsibilities with these two new grants. This next slide shows our over-target requests, which I'll say are, they are one-time over-target requests, and they're fully covered by departmental rollover and supported by the county administrator. One is to fund a part-time temporary outreach worker, which would be a 20-hour-a-week, 6-month position to assist with a home energy assistance program. Being that we had a slight reduction in full-time equivalents, that does affect the HEAP program. And at the same time, the volume of the HEAP applications processed through our office has increased over the years. So we find the need to ask for that. And then also, the second OTR is for replacement of kitchen equipment for the food nutrition program, which includes a water heater, reach-in freezer, and ice machine, all of which are showing signs of wear. The effect, if these OTRs aren't funded, we risk the backlog of HEAP applications for the HEAP program. And for the Food Net program, if the equipment breaks down, it could lead to a disruption of meal service and possible kitchen closure. So that sums up my budget presentation for 2010. And
County Administrator wanted to make a comment, and then I'll go to questions.
Just so that we understand that these slides, because this is all new to all of us, and my office has prepared some of these slides. You may have seen the graph in there that showed basically the target budget and no OTRs. That one right there. So you know, the reason that shows is no OTRs, when you saw on the later slide that there were some OTRs. We're showing in this slide OTRs that are supported with kind of target dollars. These are supported with tax dollars as opposed to rollover money, those kinds of things. That's why there seems to be a discrepancy here. So the two OTRs that Lisa talked about are funded with rollover, as I recall, rollover money. That's why they don't show up on that graph. If it's appropriate, when I see things like that might need a little explanation, I'll probably raise my hand to explain it. But that's the discrepancy between those two slides.
Question. Thank you, Joe. Martha?
About that, maybe could I assume you're still in the production mode for other departments for this. Maybe just a footnote that says, you know, what you just said, that this is all sort of target and property tax. And maybe the word tentative could be spelled right.
Yeah, that's my bad. Sorry about that. Okay. I fixed it in half of them, and a few of them I missed.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
So would it be possible to show OTRs covered, how they're covered, so that it's all on one side?
We struggled with that. We can footnote it. That might be the easiest way to do it. We'll continue to work on this, Julie. But again, if I see that there's something that needs a little explanation, I'll try to call that out and explain it. We'll work to see if there's a different way to present this.
Well, Carol.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Lisa, for a very succinct presentation. Tell us a little more about the relationship between the Office of the Aging and Food Net. I mean, you're helping with kitchen equipment. What other support do you have?
FoodNet is our subcontractor for nutrition services for the county, and my understanding, the history of FoodNet is that it was created for to be the service provider for the Office for the Aging when the Office for the Aging was created to have a nutrition program because there was no such provider at that time, and there still is not. So we rely on them to do the meal service. They also are in the middle of a lease for their with the county. The county owns their building, and they have a long-term lease that which they, by the end of the lease, they will be paid in full and own that building. So they're one of our critical and largest subcontractor.
Thank you. Carol?
You didn't talk about the OTR request for the expenses associated with the move to the new offices, so I was just curious, is that,
right, that
out
was,
of the picture?
Well, that was not supported by the county administrator, and I think my note, or else my thought on that was if those funds were necessary, if and when we move, then, I'll be coming back possibly to this body for the for contingency funds for them.
Martha and then Pam.
Two questions. First on the OTR for the outreach worker on HEAP. This may be a sort of stupid question, but isn't that going to be an ongoing need? I mean, you've got, this is for 6 months, so that would be January to June, and then
it will be during the time of the HEAP season. We had them, yes, and you are right. It will be an ongoing expense. It was just a way of getting it covered in this budget. And since this time, they've actually the state has made one-time funds available for this current year for this. So if there becomes an ongoing source of funding for this. We might not need to ask for it again every year.
I see. Okay. And Health and Human Services Committee has heard discussion about a possible, instead of moving to the rental location that you're looking at. I don't know if you want to talk about that now.
I was going to leave that for Joan to discuss.
Sure. Yes. If you'd like to do that now, we can. when we first began to draft this budget, we had to put an assumption in about the rental that we would pay if COFA were to rent private space. And based on a need of about 4,000 square feet of space at about $20 a square foot, that was an $80,000 item in our budget for next year. That motivated us to look in-house before we kind of went forward with a private rental option. And I asked Ed Marks to dust off a report that had been done several years ago looking at the Human Service Building as a part of, I think it was to see whether day reporting could go in there. And it's an older report, but at that time, it showed that there was about 4,000 square feet of space that could be available within the Human Service Building if everyone working in that building were to get their policy amount of space. We have a policy that says for given responsibilities, there's a given amount of square footage assigned to that. So if that measurement was applied across the board in that building, it would free up about 4,000 square feet, which is the equivalent of what COFA needs. So we have taken that approach in this budget, and I don't want to make it sound beyond where it actually is. It is really saying we need to explore that fully, that internal option of using existing space fully before we commit ourselves to a private lease that will run $80,000 a year. So that's where this is. It is a block of space. It aligns with what COFA needs. So the easy part of that equation is there. But there are a lot of difficult issues that arise when we talk about that. Access, security, a number of things are going to have to be looked at as we look carefully at that option. But for the purpose of this budget, we've assumed that we will go with an in-house option. We've put $25,000 in for office landscaping. It's pretty much, it's not hard walls generally in the building. It's mostly the office landscapes. And we've acknowledged that if we make the move, we will need to come to the legislature for some one-time funding to make capital improvements for access and security. And we'll need to cost out what those are. So I guess at this point I'd characterize it, this is as plan A that still has a lot of work to go before we can really lock it in. And we're going to prefer to follow that course for cost reasons before we follow plan B, which is going out and getting office space will cost us about $80,000 a year.
So thank you, Pam.
Can I follow up?
No, it's a four.
Okay. I'm sorry?
Well, do you know when you'll, do you have an idea when you'll expect to make, have that done?
So I think it'll take a few months.
Pam?
I just was wondering, with the food net, you were saying that they are buying a building from, you know, we bought the building and they're buying it from us. What building is that?
It's on Trip Hammer Road, 2422 North.
Oh, that one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Will, you had your hand?
I did have it. I'm glad we raised the whole issue of the possible move, and it's does not seem, it seems somewhat likely that it will, in fact, happen in this budget year, though no one knows, right? I am concerned about us setting up a situation where we are essentially, given all the other things that are happening, suddenly forced to take an in-house option, and we have basically feel we could not possibly afford to look at other options. I have real questions about suitability of the human services building, just in terms of access and compatibility with everything else that happens in the building. But I would hate to find us in a situation where we felt we had no other option. And I hope that you're also looking at other in-house options as well still.
And I understand your point, Will, and I think there are a lot of considerations that we have to apply here. I do think we need to look at this 4,000 square feet as a resource that we can work with. It is space in a building that we own. We can occupy it without having to pay additional rent. There will be some upfront costs. So that's kind of the way I've looked at it right now. It's a resource for us to work with. Now we need to determine, is COFA a good fit in that? And I met with the Human Services Cabinet. There's a lot of issues that relate mostly to security. And I guess the welcoming sense that Lisa's clients will have is they go into the building, because it'll have to be kind of its own entrance and so forth. So there are a lot of things we have to do so far, but we do have, as we get a little bit smaller, and resources like this come up in buildings that we own, I think our approach will generally be, let's look at that as plan A. Let's figure out if we can use that first. If that doesn't work, let's go to plan B, which is the private side option of renting space.
Dooley.
When the Space Needs Committee looked at that previously, and you weren't here, what Will just mentioned was what was found, I think, to be dispositive, that it was not an appropriately compatible group of services for COFA. And I understand that you want to satisfy yourself in that regard, but I recall how much we hoped we could fit things in.
Mike.
Lisa, you mentioned some one-time funding from the state for the HEAP. Is that in addition to the county request for the half-time person for 6 months, or is that new information that the state money could meet that need?
No, that is new information, but that's for the current year. It just came through DSS to us, and it's for 3 months currently in 2009. So with no indication that it may happen again in 2010.
So when the heating season spans 2 years, when you say 3 months in 2009, is that October 1st to December 31st, and then you bridge it, or is it the state year? So it's like December 1st until March?
It's September 1st through November 30th of 2009.
So HEAP application period.
Yes.
Okay.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Joe, I want to go back to the space in the Human Services building. Go even further back than the Space Needs Committee review. When that building was built, we looked at housing COFA there, and the board at that time determined it was not a practical fit for them. I'm glad to hear you say that we're going to be looking at the programmatic piece of this, because even though practically the space is there, as you described it, it may not be a neat fit for this particular department because of the type of clientele. And also the potential need for hiring someone for security to man the door, if that's the way it's done. I don't know if that cost is being built in. But one of the concerns I have, and as chairman of the committee, and I think the health committee needs to be involved in the discussions. It can't just be the facilities committee, because we're more familiar with the programs than the facilities committee is. The concern I have is that we don't set aside looking at other options until we exhaust this one. We need to keep other options on the table. And I don't know if you're in a position to publicly, or Ed perhaps, is in a position to publicly tell this board what those other options have been, or if it's confidential at this point.
Excuse me. I would prefer that we deal with, I think we've heard the answer. It's a work in progress, and it's a discussion that's going to have to take place in at another time when more information is available. So I would prefer that discussion take place at a later time.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, the fact is that the money has been impacted. The allocation has been incorporated into this department's budget. So when would be the right time? We can't wait 3 months to have this discussion.
The simple answer for me is this is a tentative budget, and we have to go through many other things. And then it's my sense that what I heard right here, that they're not ready to talk about all the things that they have worked on. There may be some other things that are coming. All due respect, I understand your question, and I hear your recitation of the history of the building, but no decisions have been made, and I think at this point we...
Do you know what the status of the state request to move out of that space is? I mean, that's been one of the underlying driving forces of looking at any other space.
So we're no, but do you know that? No, I don't know that. Do you know that?
No, that's what I'm asking. That's
Joe, you know that.
We've described the state the process of looking for alternative space, and the state is its patience is growing thin.
Yeah.
At the same time, the state has heard that we are making good faith efforts to look at the alternatives, and we have looked at private alternatives, and we kept them posted on that. And they've been okay as long as they can see continued progress along that path. With respect to the question about the spaces in the market, if that conversation should really be an executive session conversation, because it would affect our negotiating abilities.
Martha, Pam, and then Greg.
Wait, I had my hand up before Martha's.
Go ahead.
Okay. I have to say something, because we are verging on territory that I think makes us look really bad. And we cannot have a building for every group that we serve in our community, in our county. Our courthouse here serves people who come to court, who deal with family court issues. We have a county clerk here. We have the Office for the Aging here. We have the legislative offices, and we have the district attorney's office here. And we have many different needs. And to say that we are going to have one building for one group of people and another building for another group of people because we don't think that they are compatible is, in my mind, not physically a good idea. And also it treads on thin ice in terms of how we see the people in our community and how what that says in the way that we are talking about this. And I would suggest that we step back from that and let this process to continue.
Yeah, go ahead.
I thank you, Pam. I've been feeling that way myself, uncomfortable with that part of this conversation. I wonder if we can get a subcommittee of HHS put together to work on this sort of ad hoc and intensively. I hope the lifelong conversation can be part of it, and sort of check back in with them. And but in terms of the budget, I think we ought to take a realistic look and figure out, is there an amount of money we should park in contingency in case it doesn't work out? I mean, if you've got $25,000 in one time and it doesn't work out, what then? You know, can we really beg the state for another year to stay where we are, et cetera? So I think we just ought to figure out a realistic chunk of money to park.
Greg?
I think we heard the director and the administrator talk about coming back for contingent funds if the need arose. There's a lot of analysis that needs to take place. I just don't see this as a discussion for this time and this place. I don't think also that the need from the state courts or the will of the state courts is going to become any less intense any time in our lifetimes. They're going to want to get in here more and more every day. So I think that the administrator, the director, need to continue on the course that they're doing, analyze the spaces, and go on from there.
Thank you, Greg. Are there any other questions pertaining to Lisa's presentation other than the building? Yes, Carol.
Yeah, no, I share the concerns about HEAP in that it meets both our priorities for the Office for the Aging and our priorities related to energy and housing. Whichever office or, you know, part of our budget that you look at that from, whether you look at from PDEC and planning, housing, energy related perspective, or this one, there's no over target request for this kind of function from either of you. And while it's great that you've fulfilled our request to come in without it, it is a concern that with one-time rollover funds that we lose it from the base for the following year. So I just think we need to keep that in mind as we review the budget.
Is that in the form of a question? Is that a question or a statement?
Oh, I guess I just want to know more about whether you share that concern of that we may lose this, and what happens next year if it's not in there.
Well, it's not so much. It's not as much of a loss as trying to keep pace with demand. And in terms of the staffing that we currently have to handle the capacity for the HEAP program has been pretty stagnant or slightly decreased. So, without having asked, I did not ask for ongoing increase to our target for that, and perhaps depending upon how this heating season goes, and using this one-time funding, perhaps I will have to in the coming years. I didn't think that this was the year to do it.
Thanks.
Any other questions for Lisa? Thank you very much, Lisa, for your presentation and spending time with us. Cooperative Extension is next. Line item page, budget page 133, OTR page 28. Ken is making his way up here. You're going to use a presentation. Okay.
First, I want to thank all of you for this opportunity. It's, it's July or August, I'm sitting around thinking, oh, I really don't want to go through this again. But what's always really fun is actually when you start sitting down looking at what's been going on in a particular association. I suspect that everybody, all the department heads, I won't speak for them, but I suspect that department heads and agency heads actually get some of that same kind of excitement. It's actually, there's some really cool stuff going on, and you get a chance to actually look at it because you're putting your agency on the line. So I, in fact, I actually appreciate the opportunity as I say, I didn't, a month ago I wasn't really that excited about it, but I am right now. So if I talk too long, it's just because I'm excited.
Can we just say your full name for the record, please?
For the record, my name is Ken Schlatter, and I'm the Executive Director of Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Thank you.
Tompkins County. Cooperative Extension is an educational organization. It's one of three that the county funds, the other two being the TC3 and the public library. And as such, as an education organization, we are really focused on people and on what people need. And our belief is that basically people learn best when they're focused on priority issues that they care, obviously, that they care about, priorities that they care about. And with that, we have just a tremendous number of programs. Right click.
No.
I wanted to use this. Right.
Right.
All right. There we go. So we offer more than 200. We have more than 200 different classes and programs that are offered throughout the county. On any given day, there's something going on in every town in the county. We pretty much, I've said before, we work 16/7. It's pretty much 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's something going on somewhere in the county. This year, with the interest in food, there's always interest in food, but we seem to be more interested in it this year. Energy, building, parenting, with the stress that people are facing, parenting is increasing in popularity in terms of what we're doing. Our nutrition and cooking classes, there's a kitchen garden program this evening. In fact, if we finished early, we could head out to it. And, of course, because of the difficulties financially, there's a lot of financial management consumer education program going on. I suspect we haven't done the numbers yet, but compared to last year, we're already probably 15% over last year in terms of programming. These next few slides, I want to emphasize stewardship, efficiency, and effectiveness. We are strong believers in stewarding your money, the taxpayers' money, and this example, I think, or this slide helps to show that we have been. I took a little bit of liberty with the template because I wanted to show that, in fact, yeah, we have regular staff and we have about 60 full-time equivalents at the current time. But we also have about 60 full-time equivalents of volunteer, work study, and casual labor. So that represents about 2,000 people. Part of our strategy as an educational organization, everybody who's ever taught knows that you learn more teaching than you did ever sitting on the other side. And so those 2,000 people actually are prime beneficiaries of this educational organization. In addition, they happen to give back tremendously in the process. So we have a staff of 120 full-time equivalents that makes up about 2,000 people working for us.
So is it intentional that 2010 has no bars next to it in terms of volunteers?
Well, we haven't gotten any yet, so we don't know. that's the projections on the financial side. This slide just shows the trend in our appropriation from the county. Of course, we're starting at $620,000 there, so that number really looks dramatic. If you actually shift it, which is what I prefer to do, frame this in a way that I would like to see it, I've done here what the increases in county appropriations are juxtaposed with our increases in grant revenues and grants and contract revenues that we bring in over these last 5 years. So if you look at 2006, for example, actually in 2006, we brought in about $375,000 more in grant and contract money than we had in 2005. In 2005, in fact, the county did give us a substantial increase in our appropriation to help bring our senior staff up to what Cornell considers to be the minimum salary levels. So that, in fact, I think helped explain some of the increase there in 2006. But each year, then, we see these significant increases from the year previous. So if you add that up, today we're about $1.1 or $1.2 million more per year in grants and revenue, grant revenues, contract revenues, these don't count the county revenues, over what we were in 2006. And that's with an increase in the county budget to us, the county appropriation, of about $60,000. Was that making sense to people? Should I go back?
It didn't make sense to me at all.
All right, let's go back. And,
increases.
I'm talking about increases. So in 2006, there was an increase in our appropriation of about $10,000. In 2007, it went up about $11,000. In 2008, I think it was roughly 16 or 18 or 20. I don't remember. 2009, it went up about 20 or 24. In 2010, I'm projecting that it's dropping the 45,000 that we've lost in our target.
Yes. So this is the change.
This is a change.
So not the dollars. Okay.
Not the dollar amount. And those red bars, those red is what we our increase in revenues that we brought in. So in other words, you give us $10,000 and it goes and we go out and multiply it by 10 or 11 or 12. So in 2007, you gave us $10,000 more. We or $11,000 more. We got about $190,000 or $200,000 in grant revenue additional over what we had received in 2006. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm. So we should close the county and give you the money and get all the grant money, right?
I wouldn't. If I said, on the educational side, sure. We don't do service, right? So there's I mean, most of what everybody else does is service. And. So we're supposed to record some of our top accomplishments. I think, I mean, the point here is that because we're able to leverage both the dollars as well as the staff time, and the point about the staff time, too, I want to make is that that 2,000, those 2,000 volunteers and work study and interns have to be trained and managed by paid staff. So in a sense, if you have 60 paid staff and they're working with 2,000 volunteers and interns and work-study students and casual staff, that's about 1 to 30 or 1 to 35. And so you lose a full-time equivalent of staff, and we're losing a substantial number of other people who work for us as well. So it has its downside. I mean, leveraging has a positive side, obviously, but it has a downside as well. So... in 2009, and actually that number will probably go up. We're probably going to reach 60,000 people this year, or 60,000 participants, I should say. That doesn't mean that we reach 60,000 people, but also including 7,000 who participate in activities with multiple sessions. And being an education organization, we're interested in behavioral change. And you get that when you have, I mean, people attending one session aren't going to necessarily change a behavior. Research shows that it usually takes 5 or 6 times before people actually begin to make a change. And those multiple sessions are designed to reach people and have them make that behavioral change. I've already alluded to the local food production expansion. It's been incredibly exciting this year, seeing the explosion of effort in the county. The energy efficiency, renewable energy, has huge potential here, and it's been incredibly rewarding seeing it take root organizationally, institutionally, as well as in households. We, you know, local governments, churches, businesses are all much more interested in this now than they were in the past. And we have, as we've related in the past, we've worked hard to save money, and our savings now have crossed the $50,000 a year threshold from when I started. This is, you know, looking at energy efficiency, our energy bills are down compared to what they were 6 years ago. Our administrative staff costs are down compared to what they were 6 years ago. And a few other costs related to the association have come down as well. So pressure points for us. Being an agency and sort of being at the tail end, I thought about, you know, having a faucet or something, because for a series of faucets, the money moves from the county, goes into departments. In some cases, the departments contract with us. If you're if you're going to make a budget cut, very often we're going to be the receiving end of that budget cut. So we actually are going to be seeing, we're looking right now at contract cuts from Youth Services Parenting from DSS for Parenting Education, Farmland Protection Work. We may have to go dark here because TV services look like they might also be cut. State and federal dollars are provided to us, are tied to county appropriation and county contracts. So when we lose $100,000 from the county, we might lose another $100,000 between federal and state monies that are tied to this because it's formula-based for us. So those are two pressure points for us.
Mike. Can I ask a clarification? Those kind of what I would call second-round losses that you might experience are not included in your previous graph? That's
correct.
Okay.
And I'll show you a slide here in a minute that captures some of that. And this is the... So this was what, that OTR, again, it's starts at 640 and goes to 700, so it looks like the OTR is a huge amount. It's 33,000, and out of the over the $665,000 target that we have. Joe did not include any of the ROTRs in the recommendation, as was the case for most groups here. The cumulative effect for us, though, on our budget from the county is, as can be seen on the right-hand graph there, we're going to lose, as I said, we're expecting the 6.25% cut, which is that red portion there. The Farmland Protection Board falls under PDEQ's jurisdiction, and that's an $18,000 cut. The Health and Human Services Committee has the DSS, and we'll be losing some parenting education. There's a $28,000 contract there, and we're looking at a substantial cut in the TV, the contract with the county to do the TV shoots. The total amount then between those is a little bit north of $120,000 is what we will be seeing in cuts at this point. With what's currently in the county's recommended budget, in Joe's recommended budget. What this means for us, we'll look at roughly 3.5, I think that's about right, 3.5 FTEs, which would be a little bit more than 5% of our regular workforce. Some youth development. We'll be looking at an elimination of an after-school program in a low-income housing development. We're looking at, that's not 0.6, that's supposed to be 6/10 of an FTE in parenting education. That, as I said, we're reaching out to quite a few people in that, and that those numbers would actually have gone up, most likely. The Farmland Protection Board, it's one of the OTRs that we're actually asking to see to have that money reinstated. We would lose the person who works on that, and there would be the elimination of most of the activities related to the Farmland Protection Board, as well as a reduction of 1.75 FTEs in our web media and administration work. Again, we're going to keep as much funding continuing to move towards programming as opposed and move it from administration and program support. The OTR, a maintenance of effort in implementation of the county's agri and farmland protection plan, which I'll discuss here in a minute with you, and then the 2.25% cost of living increase, which actually is a large part of that. It actually goes for health insurance premiums. We're expecting significant increases in our health insurance premiums, and obviously the cost of living this year, they're talking about nothing more than 1% increase in CPI for the year. So, the impact, we've and other associations have done a lot of work with how effective our staff are as they spend time with us. And there's a pretty clear, almost a linear relationship between the number of years that somebody's in a position and the quality, using a number of different parameters for measuring quality of programming. We will see, undoubtedly, as we see, even if we came back and reinstated people a year from now because we were able to find money, if we lose those people, we are going to see reductions in the quality and the efficiency and the effectiveness of the work we do. And if the AFPB funding, the Farmland Protection Board funding, is entirely eliminated, these are tasks which are mandated by the New York Ag District Law. They will still have to be maintained. So somebody still has to do these things that are up here. They are currently done right now through the contract that we have passed through with the planning department. The money comes to the planning department, is passed through directly to us in support of the Farmland Protection Board. So those items there are state mandated. They will still have to be continued there. And in addition, I do have more detail on the Farmland Protection Board, which if I could pass out. As I said, that's one OTR that we are actually we've asked for. That particular OTR the previous contract was $18,000. We actually asked for 6.25% less, in line with the rest of the budget. Essentially that money is used, and I'm not sure some of you may not know what the Farmland Protection Board's sort of roles are, so those are actually laid out on this blue sheet. Every county has to fill these, through the Ag District Law, has to fulfill certain obligations, which are outlined at the first pair of those set of bullets under background. There is also a plan that each county does. This county's plan was passed back in 1998, and they're actually in the process of beginning to develop a new one. That county plan has a number of things that are expected to be accomplished, which the Farmland Protection Board is charged with implementing. So the board is actually charged with implementing the plan, and also with following up on the state-mandated items that show up under the Ag District Law. So the points on the back, under land use policies, agriculture economic development, and agriculture education, are all points that show up in the plan. And those are things that are carried out through the contract with Cooperative Extension. In addition, under the Ag Economic Development, Monica Roth, our program leader in agriculture, brings in substantial sums of money every year for ag development, which contributes to this plan. And like last year, it was $138,000 that she brought in for this plan as well. That's, you know, it's not to say that she won't continue to work to raise funds, but the fact is she relies extensively on Debbie Teeter, on the person who does this work. She relies extensively on her input in the quality of the work that the proposals that are done are based very often on the work that's being done in the county. So that $138,000 might not show up in the future. And the PDRs, the development or purchase of development rights is something that this county recently has demonstrated an extremely good track record on, high degree of success annually in getting these PDRs. Somebody has to do those. Somebody has to write those. Somebody has to gather the information to make those happen. Not every county gets them. In fact, very few counties get them. And we've brought in $2.5 million in the past several years to get those for PDRs. So.
Martha.
Oh, sorry.
Are you finished?
I'm finished.
Do you have her name written down?
No. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you. Two questions. One is about the health insurance premiums. I thought that the state pays your benefits, and they come through Cornell University, but it's basically paid by the state.
Well, the cost of living. No, in fact, I mean, even this, we none of us, I mean, I wish that all of our insurance premium was paid by the state, but we all have insurance premiums that we pay, and we've received information that we're going to see a substantial increase in the insurance premium that the staff actually have to pay. So this money that we're asking for, in other words, if the staff don't see any increase at all, then next year what they're going to actually see in their paycheck is a decrease because they're going to be paying an increased premium.
So their share of the premium is going up. Okay. Explain the Ag and Farmland Protection Board that there's been I'm a little confused about the $16,000. Now, would Monica's time still go towards that but not Debbie's? Is that...
Well, Monica theoretically isn't supposed to put much time into it. I mean, she the contract is for Debbie to provide the time for the Farmland Protection Board.
So that money pays for Debbie's time, not Monica's.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Carol, then Will.
Yeah, on both the Ag and Farmland Protection Board and on just your programs as a whole. Can you talk a little bit more about our funding in the context of the sort of overall budget? Is there state money available to implement the ag and farmland protection? As I understand, there is state money that you can apply for, but it probably takes staff time to do so. And then our budget in the context of the rest and what kind of effects you're seeing on the rest of your budget is, you know, if you get money from Cornell, how much is that being cut, or from the state? For programs and cooperative extension activities, how much of a cut are you seeing there?
The first question on the Farmland Protection Board, there is actually $50,000 that we can obtain from the state for developing a new ag plan. There is a match that has to come from the county to do that, which actually isn't that much. It's about $10,000, I think it is, over three fiscal years. Which, in fact, you can space that out over three fiscal years. So there is funding that could come from the state for the Farmland Protection Board, for the development of a new ag plan, which the county was expecting to actually begin to develop a new ag plan.
Is that in our budget? Is that in the figures you're presenting?
No, it's not in the budget. That was part of what would have been done by the AFPB if this funding it would go through. In other words, it would continue. That process would actually begin if the funding for the AFPB comes through. If it does not come through, it's anybody's guess whether it would go. My suspicion is that there would be some effort made to write a proposal. Whether it would actually get approved or not is another question. And then the rest of it. My estimates we're looking right now at about $350,000 total in reductions for next year.
Out of how big a budget?
Out of about $4 million.
Thank you. Will?
Thank you, Jim. And thank you again for giving us a quick overview. I've had the pleasure of serving on the board as liaison and endlessly impressed by all that you do. Please tell briefly about the cutback in terms of service, camera services to us. Is that part of the 1.75 FTE for media? Or is that another?
That would be part of the 1.75 for media, yeah.
So what would we be left with here?
Oh, I have not actually seen I've heard that that we're looking at roughly a 50% cut in the current contract that we have with the county for the contract for this as well as some other work that's done. What that means, I don't know yet, because that's one I just learned about. We're going to work really hard to not shut off the lights shut off the camera lights in this room. That's the last thing that I want to do is see that happen. So my guess is, I can't imagine that we're going to tell you that, oh, sorry, okay, we're going to just not do this, because I think it's really important that it's done. So.
Frank, and then Mike.
Thanks, Jim. Will, they'll only photograph the right side of the face. just clarification on Carol's question. The maximum grant that one can apply for is $50,000. The state may grant up to $50,000. We haven't always been successful in getting the maximum. But the match is at least $10,000 that the county has to come up with. And the of that 18, what used to be 18 and is now with the 6.25 cut proposed at 16-something, 10,000 of that would go towards that match to parlay the grant application. And that's being worked on, as I understand it, between the planning department with Ed and Joan and Scott Doyle with Debbie and Monica.
Mike.
Can the loss of the support for the Ag and Farmland Protection Board and the renewal of our planning, if we no longer applied for this grant to plant, what kind of impact does that have on our ag districts? Do you know? I mean, isn't that one of the main things that this supports is our ag districts?
That's a question that I'm not okay. able to answer. But in fact, I'll check with Monica and she can get back to you.
I had one other quick follow-up, and that is, you talked about the rapid expansion of food production, and that just personal interest. Is that largely in production or production ag, or what's the kind of mix there?
Oh, it's really interesting. I mean, the trend on small farms. You know, to do local production, the number of small farms in the county has grown significantly in the last 5 years, or at least from the 2002 census to the 2007 census. The ag censuses are done every 5 years, and so the last one, which was completed in 2007, the data just came out, and I want to say there was a 10-15% increase in the number of small farms less than 50 acres, and they're almost all of them are producing for local consumption. The explosion is actually across the board. I mean, it's been back here, it's been home gardens, it's been community gardens, it's been commercial production, lots of interest in season extension. And the combination of that with use of biomass, for example, to actually do season extension even longer has huge potential here in the county. Markets, the markets themselves have actually increased both in terms of number as well as in terms of sales volume. The demand for home preservation, I feel like we're back in the 50s or something with the increase in the desire for for food preservation, that sort of thing. It's just across the board from consumption to production to sale and processing.
Julie.
I always have enjoyed your colorful handouts in the past. Did you do one this year or did you forego it because of this template?
Boy, but what a great excuse that would have been, huh? No. No, in fact, I mean, I am, let's blame it on my daughter, right? I just don't have quite as much time to, I have one, I was going to show you.
She comes to the meetings.
I know, but she doesn't let me type, but doesn't make me work on my computer. You will be getting one, hopefully before the end of September, 2008 data. So, yes, thank you. I'm glad at least one person wants it. Should I make more than one copy?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mike.
Thank you.
Ken, in the middle of your presentation, you talked about state and federal dollars being tied to county appropriation contracts and used the word formula. You also described more generically how staff time has less time to apply for those. Can you spend a minute and talk about the actual formula part of that sentence?
Yeah, we have both federal and state. So in the cooperative extension system, there's a there's a state law, County Law 224, which basically outlines, it's traditionally underfunded, but it outlines a formula that's to be used for payment of state funds to county associations. Actually, it doesn't. The law itself doesn't stipulate the formula. The formula comes as a result of that law, and that's all managed up at Cornell Cooperative Extension at the state level in terms of how that formula is developed. And so it comes down to how much we receive total from the county, both in terms of appropriations as well as contracts from the county. That drives what percentage of the total allocation from the state we get. So in other words, if
give a quick number. So if we cut 10,000, does that multiply that there's going to be a $4,000 cut from the state? What's the ratio?
It's actually not as easy to say as that, but I mean, I think if, let's say the $100,000, I mean, I think we're looking at a formula cut of about 20,000, okay. 25,000 for that piece of it from the state. And then we have subsequent from the feds as well.
A statement and a question. You know, you guys are really the entrepreneurial side of kind of sort of nonprofit slash whatever. You sort of cross a lot of boundaries, and this in particular, the biomass initiative, I think, is really impressive. Joe and I had a meeting with AESQ last week, and they mentioned it, and there's a lot of exciting stuff that not just turns into spin-offs into other nonprofits, but spin-offs into, you know, economic development, real proprietary, you know, stuff. So I really value and appreciate that. A question about the video contract, and I was looking around and finally found it on page 78 of the White Book. It's a contract under county administration, right?
I don't know
if this is the time to talk about it or when we get to your budget.
I think when it comes to our budget, that'll be a part of our presentation when we come up next week.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, this is real quick. If I understood your presentation, you've given us a percent of what your total operation is in terms of the, for example, on the appropriations here that are at 650,000 plus or minus is a piece of your operation. I'd be interested in knowing, having a document, not necessarily today, or if this exists somewhere already, what our piece is compared to the total.
Yeah, actually,
in terms of programs.
In terms of programs. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry. Say that. What do you mean in terms of programs?
Well, I'm assuming that the 650 plus is something that is considered to be county relevant work programming, and then there's the non-county relevant work programming.
Actually, what we do is, the county, because the county funding, part of it we have to use to cover our building costs, for example. So the building. The way we actually use the county funding is almost as an engine for the programs that we want to do in the county, or that in other words, we have a strategic plan that we develop based on input. It was developed a couple of years ago based on input from about 300 different people in the county. So our programs are focused on what came out of that strategic plan. The funding that we get from the county is primarily earmarked for the program leaders, so the program leader's salary and so on, and my salary, well, a quarter of my salary, actually, most of mine comes from the state, and other staff, so the administrative staff, the bookkeeping staff, and so on. And then we're the ones that are basically working to write grants and get funding that then supports the salaries for all of the staff.
And another way to put it might be that in your appropriations and revenues chart, you know, our piece kind of gets the top, whereas in the number of others, it's kind of the local versus the state and federal. So, I mean, if you included it in here, your bar charts would be much higher, and this would be cutting through the middle somewhere.
Yeah. I'm lost, but I...
I can talk to you about it later.
Yeah, I would love to, actually.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much, Ken.
Thanks.
And please provide us with the multicolored paper as many as you can. Thank you. We are going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back.